Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Law.
Podcast X. Don't say that too fast.
Yay. Yeah, really.
This is Michael Loff, and with me today,
I'm Ricky Inger. I'm back. You guys were doing podcast number 9, and oddly enough, I was in room number 9 at the Southeastern Guide Dogs School.
I have to ask you, and I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but I mean, that has to be an interesting transition. A, leaving home, you know, being away from your husband and your son for 26 days or whatever it was. But then also just the regimen, the change of lifestyle, working from a home office to doing a lot of travel and exercise every day, moving around and traveling and getting acquainted with your animal.
It was very interesting, yes. And in some ways, by the end of it, I felt a bit institutionalized because the schedule is very regimented. You know, you get up at 6 a.m. and take your dog out, and then you have breakfast at 6:30, and then they have breakfast. And it's all, again, a very regimented schedule. But having said that, despite the difficulties of being away from home and having to sort of do my job for Serotech on my, quote, off hours, everybody kept talking about all this downtime that you'd have. I'm still waiting for that, really. It was just one thing after another. So they kept us quite busy. But the process of getting a dog, learning to travel in a completely different way was very, very fascinating, and I couldn't have imagined what it would be like until I actually did it. There was one point where I was on this sidewalk that kind of zigged and zagged back and forth, and there were people strolling around, and I was walking at a pretty good clip and just not even thinking about what I was doing because it was such a natural feeling to just stroll along and pay attention to what the dog was doing, where the harness handle was going and making sure to follow that. But otherwise, I really felt like I was completely unencumbered, whereas with a cane, you know, you've got to worry about if you got cracks in the sidewalk, it's going to jump up and hit you. You know, and
are you going to put it between someone's legs? You know,
yeah, exactly. Going through a crowd has always been a nightmare, but it's really quite interesting to be able to not have to be concerned with that.
Well, and it had to be difficult because you had to switch animals. So, and I know how attached people can get, and you spend, I guess, almost at least 2.5 weeks or so, you know,
yes,
2/3 of the course with your first dog, only to find that you were not compatible either.
He was a little bit young and quite headstrong. And I think within a couple of months, he'll be a great worker for somebody once he matures a little bit. But
understand speed. It was an issue of he didn't understand they can walk as fast as you want or slow.
He had two speeds, stop and light speed. And sometimes that's not always an option. And so it was a very difficult time emotionally to have to say goodbye to one animal and then to sort of try and put that aside a little in fairness to the new dog who turned out to be absolutely wonderful. His name is Eddie and he's lying beside me. He's on the podcast, although he's very quiet, at least at this point, so we may not hear him. But that, again, it was a very difficult transition emotionally, but in the end it worked out extremely well.
Well, hopefully he'll make his broadcast debut one of these days. Maybe him and Jackson will have a few words on the podcast
or
something. But we definitely want to do one a show in the future, and I'd certainly like to speak with people who have done it. We'll talk with anyone, but certainly I'd like to speak with people who have had two or more dogs to kind of talk about differences between the animals. People who have actually gone to two different schools, I think, might be interesting to get a flavor for how the regiments are different in the instruction. And you can always call us on the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. We'll be glad to do that. One thing that was kind of interesting, I don't really know if it was a news story as much as just kind of here's what's happening, but it was talking about some of the research with robots and some of the things they're doing now, which I find just totally amazing.
It's fascinating.
Whether it be assisting autistic children, helping them to smile and learn to interact with other people, assisting people in navigating the corridors of assisted living facilities, just a whole lot of things. Maybe people who have limited hand movements. You know, the robot can actually pick things up for them if they accidentally drop it, or learning their emotions and when to assist them and when to keep their distance. And I guess it even talked about giving hugs here. So can you imagine hugging a robot? You know, that's...
I don't know. Well, you know, people really do tend to anthropomorphize certain things. And I think I've even heard stories of people with their Roombas.
Exactly.
Being very attached to their Roomba.
Labeling their Roomba.
Yeah.
So then when they send it off for repair, they want to get the same unit back.
They dress them up in clothing even, which I think, I don't know, I find that a little questionable.
Ask that question on the podcast. Would you hug a robot? And someone out there going, that depends what it looks like. What gender
exactly.
is it? It's a robot, buddy.
It better be nice and svelte and tall and hugging a robot. That would be very strange.
Yeah, I don't know.
Old metallic.
That hugging you back would just be the weird thing, you know? Would you, and I ask the audience this, would you, if you knew the technology was perfected, would you consider having a seeing eye robot?
I would really have to think about that because it's very fascinating from a geek perspective. But I have to say there's something comforting about reaching down and feeling a nice, warm, furry body that you can just kind of pat from time to time and say, oh, there you are. Then, of course, you've got to feed your furry companion, whereas you wouldn't have to do that with a robot.
Right. Yeah, I can sleep until noon and not worry. You know, he can just come to life
exactly.
when I need him. But then have his batteries die out. You'd be out on a cloudy day or something. And
yeah, he'd need one of those new lithium-ion batteries they're coming out with that are supposed to last quite some time.
Yeah, MIT's come out with a new technology to, they claim, reduces the time of charging a cell from 6 minutes down to 18 seconds. So if they can charge multiple cells at the same time,
cool.
you're talking a few hours down to just a couple of minutes or even seconds, and they're supposed to hold their battery life even longer. So that'll be some exciting news for those of us who have multiple lithium batteries for our cell phones and Victor and other
laptop
devices.
And so. Victor and all that stuff. If your seeing eye robot ran out of power, you'd have to make it on your own to some place where you could plug it in, but hey, it might work out.
Yeah, I don't know.
One, though, would be, I'd be a little disturbed by it.
I just keep hearing that song, in the year 2525, you know, I was like, just a little bizarre. But speaking of batteries and devices that require batteries, Apple has launched the new iPod Shuffle for just $79. It's 4 gig, so it's not 8 or 16 like the Nano, but 4 gig should give you about 1,000 songs. Has speech, I guess, in over 14 languages. So again, about 1,000 songs. And I think interesting is the size of this device. What is it, 1.8 inches long and 0.3 inches thick, something like that? And it's the size of a AA battery.
Smaller. I would lose it.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture out how the controls work on it. But yeah, I would lose that little thing. That's just crazy.
But I do think it's very, very cool that they're enabling this with speech because, of course, the iPod Shuffle has always, it doesn't have a display, and so you kind of get whatever it decides to play. But the idea that it is going to be enabled with speech, I'm hoping that the mainstream will recognize just how cool it is to have this sort of eyes-free operation and think, hey, well, we can have this on the Shuffle, and I can actually hear the name of the artist that is currently playing. Why not enable this sort of eyes-free operation in more devices? So I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Now, it's something I think you have to enable. I don't think it comes talking. It's just like you plug it in your Mac and make it talk. And I believe it's set up just like the Nano, but I don't have one. But that was my understanding.
Right. Okay. So you would actually have to know that the capability existed.
Right, and copy your Alex voice.
It. Yeah.
Or
and Alex breathes, which is a little disturbing.
That's weird. I can't get used to it. I bought a Mac a couple weeks ago, and that breathing, I'm like, it's not necessary. I don't know why some people think it's cool, but you know, when he breathes, like reading a URL or something.
Right.
I don't know. It's just weird. I just haven't gotten used to that yet. Google Voice is something that was launched last week. And it's not available to the masses yet. It's a spinoff of they bought a company called Grand Central. And I don't know if Mikey's ever played with it. I never did.
I never have either.
But it was really cool service. You can have your calls ring multiple phone numbers. There's four options. So you can either answer the call or say go to voicemail and then listen to it as they're leaving their message. And if you decide it's important, you can actually intercept it and say, hi, you know, act like you didn't know.
Yeah,
and,
that's
and in
nice.
Grand Central, you could even, if there's someone you just didn't want to talk to, it could actually play a message saying this number has been disconnected.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
But the new Google Voice is going to allow, among other things, it's going to do basically speech to text. So it will take your voice messages and convert them to text and send them to your phone, or you can review them online or log in and hear your voicemail. So it's going to be pretty powerful. It's going to have, I understand, free calls within the U.S. and discounted rates that are supposedly even better than Skype for making international calls. So I think it's going to be a pretty powerful, awesome system. We'll be tracking that. Hopefully it's all accessible, and I'm sure we Blinks will be playing around with that when they make it available to the masses in a couple weeks.
We love our phones. And another really cool thing it can do, I think, is you can record a call. You can't do it stealthily. If you press a button, it will inform the caller that the call is now being recorded. But I think that's quite nice if you are maybe having a meeting or something like that and want a way to do that. You've got it with a touch of a button. That's very cool.
Yeah, I love that. It sounds very feature rich, and I can't wait to play with that. They're claiming it's going to be competition to Skype. I don't know about that because I don't think it has a voice application where you can initiate voice calls like we're doing now. And, of course, Skype has video as well that a lot of people are playing with. But certainly an addendum, very powerful tool to add onto your cell phone. A couple things on the cell phone front. Apparently, Mike Cavill's not the only person leaving Sprint. They've been losing a few numbers and apparently now are offering, if you recruit a new user, you're an existing user and bring in someone new, you get $100 for a referral fee. And if that person stays with the company past the first month and stays with their contract, they get $25 back as well. And also on the phone front, there's a service now called Lexi that lets you listen to what they call them, quick casts. Right.
Yeah.
They're short versions, 1 to 6 minute versions of podcasts. And they've already signed on a few folks like ESPN, New York Times front page, and some local news, I guess, radio and TV stations are putting newscasts up there.
I think even The Onion
The Onion
has done that. And that's very entertaining. I know that sometimes being stuck in an airport during a layover and not wanting to pay for access to wireless to use my laptop, I could certainly use a bit of entertainment, and that's going to come in really handy. The cool thing about Lexi is that if you, say, have 1 meg that you're allotted, the only thing you'd be using with Lexi is just your talk minutes, which is kind of nice.
So if you want to call it and sign up and try it out, it is, where is this, San Francisco? What is this, area code 415?
Yeah, sounds like California.
Somewhere. Yeah, 692-4933. Again, 415-692-4933. So call up that Lexi and get those quick casts. I think we'll make a Serotalk quick cast. We'll see
I
if anyone has any interest in that. Well, and I wonder if it'll let you, and I'm sure some blind folks will try this out, if you call it on something other than a cell phone, if it will know that and not allow that.
Interesting.
Because it said you had to call up from your cell phone. So,
inquiring minds want to know. I wonder who the first tester is going to be. Somebody's picking up the phone as they're listening right now going, I'm going to try it.
Yes, they are going to try it.
So you can call the Blab line with your results and let us know how that goes.
Exactly. Well, Ricky, have you ever tried to write a grant?
I have. In fact, I used to work for a nonprofit corporation and had to write several grants as part of my job. Boy, was it ever fun.
Yeah, it's pretty tedious.
Exactly.
When you talk about dotting the I's and crossing the T's and making sure there's no misspellings and everything's very clear on what you want to do. And, of course, my spin working at the Better Business Bureau, we had a lot of people that fell for scams saying, you've been guaranteed a grant, just give us $300. The main portal, at least through the government, is grants.gov. Certainly not the only entity, but 22 different U.S. government agencies go through there. There's over 1,000 different grants that I know of, anyway, that you can choose from. And that's been really pushed because a lot of grants are now available through the modest, low-cost $787 billion stimulus plan.
They put a little pocket change into that, didn't they?
Just a little bit. It's interesting, if you so inclined to do so, read how that money's allocated. It's very interesting. But anyway, what it's doing is grants.gov is the official place if you want to get a piece of that, but it apparently is kind of overwhelmed right now, and some people are getting server errors as they try to complete their grant applications. So
I don't suppose an employee of grants.gov can submit a grant saying, we'd like upgraded servers, and here's why.
Yeah, let's upgrade the servers. That would be a good idea. I kind of thought this was already in place, but they just announced last Wednesday that Google, along with Yahoo and maybe some other entities, have begun what they call behavioral targeting. And that is basically showing you ads based on where you go and what you're doing online by storing cookies on your computer. Now, thanks to a little pressure from the FTC, or Federal Trade Commission, Google is giving people the ability to opt out, kind of look at a list of all their different categories. So I guess you can either totally opt out or say, I don't want to be tracked as I look for these particular items of interest. They claim that certain things will be excluded, like some health information or gender issues, things of that sort. So we'll be curious to see how that pans out.
The cool thing, though, is that you will be able to look at and edit the information that they have available on you. So you can actually look at your own history and see what it is that you've been doing and edit and say, no, please don't track this. I don't want to show ads about NASCAR or whatever. I was searching for somebody else, and that's not actually something I'm interested in. Or if you're just, you don't want them to have that information, you can opt out.
Yeah, I think there's, 20 main categories and 300 subcategories or something like that.
Yeah.
I may be wrong on that second number. It can certainly go both ways. It can help us to keep track of what we're doing with our time. You know, you have the whole regional advertising going on now as well, so that, you know, you and I could go to the same website and do the same things, but myself in Evansville would get different ads than you would being in North Carolina. So that's the future. Now, there's even radio stations doing that now as well. But speaking of selling information, Walmart, because they just can't make enough money, is now getting into the health records business. And they're going to set up computers for doctors, and they're going to seize part of this. We were talking about the stimulus plan. Part of it, Barack Obama allocated $19 billion, or what I think comes out to about $60 per person, if my math is right, as part of the stimulus plan to promote this whole digital online medical records system.
How exactly does this work? Does a physician subscribe to that and then maintain patient records online? And if other physicians have subscribed to that, they're able to then say, I were in Florida and had an injury. My records would be easily accessed back in North Carolina? Or does it work differently than that?
I don't know the specifics on it, but one radio show that I listened to said they were very concerned because it would be a central database, and there was a lot of concern about who would have access to that information. Essentially, anyone in a medical office, anyone handling insurance, billing, different records, hospitals, and certainly the potential for security breaches. Adobe, I guess, of course, they already had security breaches in their Acrobat Reader, but now they have two new Flash updates, one specifically for Internet Explorer and one for those using Firefox or Safari. Apparently, there's 5 security holes in it that can allow malicious activity. If you view the wrong movie, go there and get them.
Wouldn't that be a nice way to wake up in the morning and discover, well, because you were on that web page with Flash and you played that movie, you're now the proud owner of a brand new virus.
Well, and that's why, you know, some people say, well, I don't need to install virus software because I don't go to the wrong websites. But you can't really tell now. So many credible sites have been infected with different malware, unbeknownst to them. So you really can't be that naive and just believe that. I mean, you have to take some precaution these days.
It's essential to have a good antivirus program, and there's really no reason not to, because there are several free versions and several very moderately priced versions. So the only reason for you not to do it is that you just actively decide that you don't feel like it, and in which case you may get an unpleasant surprise at some point.
Exactly, and you may not know it for a while. You could be harboring that. If you don't install the software, you could be carrying it around, and maybe it launches on a particular day or something. Remember old Michelangelo back in the early 90s? Well, the final story I have here is this interesting new social networking called World Sings. Apparently, the way it works is you as a band, it's for independent artists, you know, musicians and bands, you can go and put your music up there, and you actually interact with people, like right on your wall, you exchange messages. And what I think is really cool is the site, they claim they're going to give you a lot of demographic information about those who like you, where they reside, gender, age ranges. So if that's true and that information is accurate, that can really help a band really decide where to put their efforts in terms of marketing and maybe where they want to schedule for concerts and things of that sort. But they're adding some nice prizes to it next year. Actually, about 1 year from now, they're going to draw 20 finalists. They're all going to meet out in where Las Vegas, and yep, one is going to win $500,000, and the other 19 are going to split $500,000 between them. So I mentioned that because we do have a lot of listeners to this show and a lot of blinks and winks that who are musicians and do some great work. So by all means, yeah, check out World Sings, and maybe you could be the next American Idol.
Exactly. I think this is a very nice thing because there is such a fascination with American Idol. It's amazing how many people, and people you wouldn't even think about, say, oh yeah, I gotta watch American Idol every week. I track it like a soap opera, and MySpace has sort of catered in some ways to musicians. You're able to put samples of your music on your page and that sort of thing, but I don't think MySpace was the ideal solution, and I think this offers a lot more as far as not only getting comments about what you're doing, getting demographics about who likes you, but doesn't it also offer the fans the ability to vote on a particular person or say thumbs up and thumbs down, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, they get to vote, and of course, this promotes the whole social networking thing. So the fact that you're commenting on the band's wall, I don't know, I guess that could be a concern if you had dysfunctional groupie or something.
There is that.
So that could be that,
that's just all part of the scene, though, isn't it?
Well, exactly. Well, I guess the only other thing to mention here before we go and do our podcast about podcasts, that's right, that's what we're talking about today.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
A self-referential episode.
That's right, because the reason we want to promote a network, in other words, we'd like to link to your shows and you link to ours, that's not saying we want to compete or take you away from any other network that you may be on, but there's certainly no reason that we can't promote each other's work. Kind of like the web ring of podcasting. Remember the web ring?
Yes, web rings.
Yeah, how cool is that stuff? That's what we're going to be doing. We're going to play you a few segments from some different podcasts. Mike Arrigo put in his pocket both the Mobile Geo and Wayfinder. We're going to let you listen to a little bit of that, as well as a couple others. But before we go, it is CSUN this week, and you and I and MC will be out there, along with a few other from the Serotech crew. But I will try to get as many interviews as possible. I'm shooting for 60. We'll see if that's not too overzealous. But why don't you tell us what you have going on at CSUN and what booth number we are and all that good stuff.
Yes. We are in booth 357 in the Marriott LAX. So we are not in the Renaissance Hotel. However, our very own Mike Calvo will be doing a presentation at the Renaissance on Thursday. He is doing a session on remote training and support, especially as it relates to the boomer generation and keeping them up to speed with technology through remote training. So that should be interesting. If you're at CSUN, definitely want to check that out. And again, you'll have Mr. Loff running through the hotels at lightning speed, getting interviews from all sorts of wonderful vendors. And naturally, those will be on SamNet Radio. So be sure and tune in for that.
Radio.samobile.net and tune into Sam Radio. We'll get things up as quickly as we can.
Again, if I didn't mention it, we are in booth 357, and that'll begin on Wednesday, March 18th.
Who can forget a number like 357?
I know. How cool. Maybe next year we'll get 579, perhaps. I want one with, well, in fact, we did get one with all prime numbers. Okay, that's very good, somehow.
Never thought of that. Interesting. That's a geek for
you. These are the things that go through my head. Just a little peek that nobody really wanted inside my mind. Yes, the prime number booth, 357, and we'll be there from Wednesday through Saturday morning.
All right, very good. Well, Ricky, I hope things go well for you with Eddie, and as you take on the city there, and I'm sure he's a nice friend for your son, make sure that he doesn't feed him anything he shouldn't, and I'm sure it'll be good.
That's an ongoing battle. Turns out bottle caps are not good meals for dogs, and so the drop it phrase is used frequently in the past couple of days, but we are doing well, and I look forward to seeing all of you at CSUN.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and let's continue with the podcast. Here's an excerpt from a podcast from Mike Arrigo of St. Louis comparing the Wayfinder GPS solution for Symbian versus Mobile Geo from Code Factory for the Windows mobile platform.
Let's go ahead and enter the route for our destination then, and I'll show you how that's done on each one. So let's go ahead and do Mobile Geo first here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab my Windows mobile phone here, and let me unlock the keypad.
Mobile Geo window, left soft functions, right soft menu.
Functions is where we have to go, so that's the left soft key.
Set positions, one of root functions. Search, 3 of 8.
Search is where we actually need to go.
Nearest POI, 1 of 2.
Oh, nearest POI. The deck talk, it's POI is what that is. But we need to go to...
Advanced POI search, 2 of 2.
Advanced POI search.
POI search conditions, search screen box.
I actually did enter this beforehand to make sure that it would find it, so we didn't spend a lot of time doing that, but I put the word MOM in there. Because the name of the place, remember, is Mom's Deli. But I will show you what else is here. How you can adjust your search.
Plus search my name, plus category all, 3 of 9.
Oh, you can search in a specific category. We probably could find it if we search for restaurants, but in this case, just leaving it at all is fine.
Plus subcategory all, 4 of 9.
Subcategory all.
Plus get whole word, no. Plus search direction all, plus user plus as well, yes. Plus starting distance, 0 miles.
0 miles.
Plus ending distance, 10 miles, 9 of 9.
Let's decrease that a little bit.
POI search conditions window, ending distance, numeric, edit, 0, blank.
Let's do 3.
0, 1.
So we just do 3 here.
3.
And hit left soft key for OK.
Mobile Geo window, left soft search, right soft menu. POI search conditions, search string map.
We could type that if it wasn't already there, but it's already there. So let's just go ahead and press the left soft key here, and it should do the search for us. And it's making it sound like it's thinking. This is one area where Wayfinder's a lot faster than Mobile Geo is. It's still searching.
95°N/W.
Still thinking. And that's why I slowed the, that's why I took the ending distance way down from 10 miles, too, to try to speed it up a little. It's still searching, actually, for that category, or for that place. Still searching.
Search results.
Okay.
POI search results. Mom's delete 0.44 me ahead.
Press enter on that.
POI details. POI details. Name mom's delete.
Okay. Now I think if we do... Let me see what the soft keys do at this point.
Oh. Left soft options. Right soft back.
Yeah, we do options now.
Set as destination, 1 of 3.
That's what we want. Select that.
Create pedestrian route to Mom's Deli, 1 of 4.
Create pedestrian route, that's what we want. So we select that, and it makes the working sound again.
Main screen, loss quality, 11 feet, tracking 9 satellites, position 3643 Prather Avenue. Creating pedestrian route, please wait. Creating pedestrian route, please. Destination set to waypoint 10, Mom's Deli, next, waypoint 2, Prather 56 feet left. Proceed ahead on Prather Avenue heading south. Main screen, loss quality, 11
okay.
feet.
So our route is set...
3643 Prather Avenue.
Okay, and what it does when you enter a route in this, and it took me a little bit to figure this out, it turns the look-around announcements off. So I'm going to hold the pound key for a second to re-enable that.
Look-around announcements on.
Okay, there we go. So that's set, and we are good to go. So, now let's...
Main screen,
actually, I'm going to lock the...
feet, tracking 7 satellites, position 3643
okay.
Prather Avenue.
I'm going to go ahead and lock my keypad again on this phone.
Left soft unlock.
All right, now for the Wayfinder, for the Symbian phone. Okay, so to do that, let's... we're still in that all nearby, so let's hit the key 2.
Back. Menu tab, sheet 1 of 19.
To go
map,
back to the main menu. And the other thing I like about Wayfinder as opposed to Mobile Geo, you have to go to a completely different place to enter an address or to do a search for a place like we just did. With Wayfinder, it's all one place. You go down to Find.
Find.
And select that.
Select. Address or company. Text. 1. Option.
Okay.
Two,
and this,
map.
I will just type in the word mom for Mom's Deli. One other thing, actually, I do want to check here first. I want to make sure this is set for pedestrian mode. To do that, you change it in the settings, actually. And the way it handles that by default is a little bit different, too. In a vehicle route, it actually... Your screen reader, if you read the guide tab, will tell you what the next turn is and what the street is. And the female voice will give you the turn instructions. When you do a pedestrian route, by default at least, the female voice is muted, and the screen reader actually says, you know, walk 500 feet, then turn right, or turn right here. But if you leave it that way, then you have to stay in the guide tab or go to the Around You tab to read that. What I like to do is re-enable the female voice for the turn instructions, and that way we can go back to the All Nearby and get our announcements of what's around us with Wayfinder, and the female voice will then provide the turn instructions, although you can still look at the guide tab to see what your next street is. So let me make sure this is set for pedestrian.
Disconnect from Jeep settings. Select.
Okay.
Access. Phone tab sheet 1 of 5. Volume 1 of 6.
Okay.
One.
So let's make sure that...
Transport mode pedestrian.
One. Okay, we are set to pedestrian.
Distance units miles. Please optimize route for time.
Okay, and optimize route for... You can actually set it to optimize for time or distance. This is so close that it's not going to make any difference where this is at, but usually for pedestrian, you would want it for distance, probably. In a vehicle route, if you say to do it for time, a lot of times it'll take the highway route. If you say distance, a lot of times it'll even have you twisting and turning through a bunch of different streets if it means less distance. So let me make sure the female voice is enabled here, too.
Voice prompts normal.
Voice prompts normal. It is. Okay, great. Let's go ahead and do our search here. Hit the key, too, right soft key for go back.
Back. Menu tab.
Go to find.
Find. Select. Address or company. Text. 1.
Okay, and back. Let's do M.
Caps M. M. O.
I'm just typing it on the keypad.
M.
Okay, that should be enough for it to find it. Let's hit select here.
Select. Searching. Address or company. Text. Searching. Address or company. Text. Mom. 1. Options. 2. Back. Result tab sheet.
Okay.
Mom's Deli,
and it's found it.
Meets,
so it's, it is quite a bit faster.
Jameson Avenue, St. Louis, 1.
And it gives us the address and back. All that stuff. We could get that with Mobile Geo also if we opened the description. So we're on what we want. Let's press the select key again, and that should calculate our route.
Select. Calculating a route. Mom's Deli 0.5 meets, St. Guy, walk 500 feet. Then turn right into Lindenwood Place.
And it's already got the route. See, as you can tell, it's quite a bit faster. So it says walk 500 feet, then turn right into Lindenwood. Now, like I say, if we leave it on this tab, well, in this case, the screen reader and the female voice would provide the instructions. So what I'm going to do here is go back to the All Nearby, and both of the routes are now set. So what will happen is they should both tell us what we're coming up to, as well as give us the turns. And I won't talk for a while then, so you can just hear how these handle things. And I'll put in a comment if need be. But let's press number 3.
All Nearby tab sheet 15 of 19, 125 feet northeast, 35 degree Brainerd Avenue / Burnott Avenue.
That's, we're back on that, so that'll update.
Back.
And let's go ahead and take off here, and let's allow these two GPS products to guide us.
On President, turn behind slight left and head northeast, 69 feet away, point to Brother.
145 feet northeast, 28 degree Avenue / Burnott Avenue, 711 feet ahead.
Continue straight, 706 feet away, point 5, Brother and Lindenwood. Turn right on Lindenwood Place heading west.
We're not to the turn yet. We've got a ways to go, though.
110 feet southeast, 157 degree Brainerd Avenue / Dollison Avenue.
On Brainerd Avenue, 195 feet slight left to Myrtle Avenue.
In 500 feet, turn right, and then in 500 feet, turn left.
You had talks telling you the update for what we're at, and then the female voice giving us the instruction.
East, 100 degree Brader Avenue / Martel Avenue.
That's an intersection on the other side of the street.
Approaching right turn at waypoint 5.
In 200 feet, turn right, and then in 500 feet, turn left.
135 feet northeast, 24 degree Brader Avenue / Martel Avenue.
In 100 feet, turn right, and then in 500 feet, turn left.
Heading west, on Brader Avenue, 121 feet ahead to line to Wood Place.
72,
turn right
161
here.
Degree Brader Avenue / Lindenwood Place.
Just made the turn.
10 minutes later.
You have reached your destination.
Yes, we have.
Southwest, 206 degree Mom's Deli.
Now, I don't know exactly what happened here, but Mobile Geo did not say that we...
5 feet ahead to destination,
see, that's incorrect. Hold on. Let me check and see what... Well, that's the point of interest. Okay, let me see where it thinks our destination is here.
Mobile Geo window, left soft functions, right soft menu.
Let me see here.
Next turn waypoint 10, mouse delete, comma 20 feet, behind slide right, less than 1 minute.
See, it says it's behind already. But Mobile Geo didn't even say when we got to the destination. That's one issue, even in the previous version of Mobile Geo that I've seen, it doesn't tell you that you're actually at the destination, or it tells you the destination's on the wrong side. It does appear they fixed the problem with it telling you it's on the wrong side, but it doesn't tell you that you're actually at the destination properly, like the way Wayfinder does. And I've noticed that even in the previous version. I'm not sure what the deal is with that, but that's definitely something to be aware of, especially considering it's the more expensive of the two products.
To hear the entire 58-minute podcast, either go to www.blindcooltech.com or get the link at www.cerotalk.com. Here is a segment from the March 1st Guerra Show, hosted by Stephen Guerra on ACB Radio, where he interviews Neil Ewers.
What I'd like to see is assistive technology diminish, because what I really think needs to happen is that we have to develop applications, software, and hardware that work for everybody, because there aren't enough people who are blind to really make the mass market companies lower their prices enough or make something that is accessible to people who are blind. So we've got things that are developed by companies for people who are blind, and I'm not knocking those companies at all. If it weren't for them, I wouldn't be where I was. However, cell phones, for example, our big thing at Trace, and voting machines. Cell phones in particular, if you're driving down the road at night, and we used to make this argument to companies before they even thought about speech in cell phones. Wouldn't it be nice if your cell phone could speak so you could dial the number without looking off the road and maybe crash? So we began to think, what if you come up with ways that a product that would work for everybody could be used by people who are blind or vice versa? What is it that a product that I would need, like speech, which is really not very expensive to include in devices, what would that do for the sighted public or anybody, people with learning disabilities, who need both the sight and the audio? And I think the lesson we learned was that the more we can convince industry that if they make something like, for example, the Olympus series recorders, now the DS 20, 30, and 40, and there are a couple of new ones out now, have spoken menus. That's not because they're just making them available for people who were blind. They understood that there were some of their clients who were not all that comfortable with recorders, who liked the ability to both see what the screen said and hear it as well. Two different methods of obtaining that information. So the more we can convince companies to do that, the less it will be assistive technology and the more it will be just mainstream technology.
Let's go off on tangent and let's go back. You said your first computer was an Apple II Plus. My first computer was an Apple actually 2E and then the 2C and such before I got into the DOS computers. Have you had the opportunity to play with the more recent Macintosh that with version Tiger 10.4 and Leopard 10.5 that is has the built-in screen reader and magnification tool right on the system? And
Yes, I have.
Okay, so what makes you not use that as opposed to using a computer, say, for instance, with JAWS?
If that was the only thing I had, I would use it. If it were as robust as JAWS or Window Eyes, I would use it. It's not. But as you said, it's built into the operating system. It doesn't cost any more for me to buy it than it does for anybody else to buy it. And it works. Now, it is not a full-fledged screen reader. There are people who would disagree with me. There are people who do their whole jobs on the Mac. I have a computer that has both Windows and the Mac on it. And I use it sort of half and half, although I do more in Windows just because it's what I'm used to, and that's my main workstation. But I have done some playing with the Mac, and the newer versions keep getting better. What can I say? I mean, when JAWS and Window Eyes first came out, what were they like? They were buggy, just as any software was. And the operating systems weren't all that good either. So I don't know where Apple's going to take this if they keep improving it. For me, there are an awful lot of software editing packages on the Mac that I would love to be able to access. I have a number of them on the PC I can access. But if the Mac screen reader becomes a bit more robust, who knows? A number of people. I know people already. People who are blind and people who are sighted who are buying Apples, not necessarily because they always want to use Apple, but because you can put both operating systems on.
Right. Let's talk about your podcast. You have been a contributor to Blind Cool Tech for quite some time, and I believe you're probably sharing the responsibilities with Larry Skukan now on maintaining Blind Cool Tech. Is that correct?
Not any longer, but I do contribute podcast. I am three times busier than I ever was at Trace, and that had nothing to do with Trace not giving me work. It's just that my consulting business has just taken off. My teaching job has taken off, and I'm just too busy to be a moderator. But I do contribute. A lot of the recent stuff I've done has been on different recording devices because I do like recording, and I like new toys, as my wife will tell you. And how accessible they are. Now, and what's the meaning of accessibility? A lot of people say, well, if it doesn't talk, it's not accessible. And I'm saying, okay, to some people that is true. Some people need the spoken menus. I grew up in a world where nothing spoke. I mean, obviously, reel-to-reel recorders didn't speak unless you recorded something in them. And it's a buttons and levers and dials and whatever. And you learn to count clicks and you learn to put your finger in the volume wheel notch. And so what I'm trying to help people with on Blind Cool Tech, and I do a number of other podcasts that are not visually oriented, blindness oriented for different companies, etc. But mostly for Blind Cool Tech, it is recording equipment. I did, as you said, one on the Stream. I've done one recently on the new Eddyroll HR, on the Sony PCMD50, and some of the Olympus recorders. And the recorder that I first did one on was the Sound Devices recorder, which is the professional recorder that I use for my on-location recording. And every once in a while, I'll throw in something different. Recently, I did a weird podcast where I had some contact microphones that you actually place against things, and they don't record anything unless they're hearing the vibration inside the object. So I record all kinds of strange things.
That sounds like
a reflector to record a catbird that was about two blocks away that sounded like it was eating the end of my microphone. So every once in a while I break out and do something different.
Have you with your toys that you've played with, have you played with the bone headphones?
No, but I had a set of headphones many years ago that had microphones in them that were actually binaural headphones. And I have a recording, actually. We were in a cave in Lake Michigan where the waves were banging off the stalactites and the stalagmites, and we were gently floating through this cave recording this wonderful sound binaurally with my headphones on. And the people in the boat with me saw this rock hanging down in front of me, and they couldn't decide whether to say, "Neil, there's a rock in front of you, you're going to hit it," and interrupt the recording, or whether to just let me go ahead and hit it. Unfortunately, they chose the latter. So there's this lovely tape of slosh, 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 like bang, oops. No, I have not heard of those particular headphones.
No, bone headphones are supposed to, they sit on the outside of your ear, and they use your bone structure to transmit the sound.
Okay.
I think
they're
they...
They're not microphone.
They're not any sort of microphone. They're just headphones. And so Mike Calvo from Serotech told me about them. I saw them. But it's a interesting concept. If anyone wants to see about those headphones, you can go over to thegera.com and links of interest, and you'll see a link there. Speaking of websites, Neil, excuse me, you have your own website. What's that web address?
It's Ravenswood, RavenswoodOOD.org, and it has my information about recording, live recording. It also has my CDs.
And you have four CDs, correct?
Yes, I have four out currently. And they're also available through iTunes and various other places as well.
Okay, that's good to know. If anyone's using the iPod Shuffle, and they're using it with speech.
For Neil Ewers.
Yeah, so you have one as well?
No, actually I don't.
Okay. No, I thought you did.
I use my Victor Stream.
Yeah, so do I. And you're an avid user of the Victor Stream, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any particular...
I read a lot of books.
Do you have any particular interests of books or genres of books that you read?
Depends. I'm reading a book now that actually I bought a course on the history of music. Being a musician, I figured I should learn even more. Occasionally, if I'm walking on the treadmill and exercising, I like to read adventure books because it's kind of, you know, it's kind of upbeat and I'm bumping around on the treadmill. But the history. But actually, what I find is I actually record. I'd get satellite TV and I'd record stuff off the History Channel just for my own use and the Science Channel and put that on the stream. And when I'm walking on the treadmill, I listen to that. And I'm thinking, you know, those dramatized history things, if I had that when I was growing up rather than those dry history books, yeah. I'd know a whole lot more about history than
yeah,
I
Yeah, you're right. It's I think today it's almost impossible to read newspapers through Bookshare and listen to as many podcasts that are coming out and stay on top of it. And on top of it all, read the book of your choice. Are you an Audible.com fan?
Yes, I have an Audible subscription. And what's nice about Audible is that a lot of the books are read by the author. Now, that doesn't always work, but some of Bill Clinton's books, Jimmy yeah. Carter's books, Barack Obama's books. I'm not sure Barack read his. I can't remember.
He did. He read a couple of them, at least one of them that I remember reading. But yes, I'm an Audible fan also, and yeah, I'm a faithful user to the Victor Stream.
You can listen to any one of three podcasts produced by Steve Guerra by going to his website, www.thegera.com. That's TheGuerra.com. There you have it. Just two of over 50,000 podcasts on the internet. Some claim there's as many as 100,000 when you include newscasts and other information that's updated on a regular basis. What follows are my 10 suggestions if you wish to get into the art of podcasting. These are not exact rules because it is an art, and there's always personal preference involved. The first thing, I would suggest doing something you're personally interested in. To do a podcast based on what you think people might like to know, is going to become boring and monotonous in a very short period of time. Think about what software you want to use for this purpose. You'll want some software for actually recording the audio. Some options include things like SoundForge from Sony, Goldwave that many people use at goldwave.com. There's the APH Studio Recorder, free applications for Windows, Linux, and Macintosh like Audacity. Or there's multi-track applications if you are a musician and can do multi-track recording to make music beds, production beds, harmonize with yourself, things of that sort. Such things in Windows as MultiQuence, MultiQuence, a product made by the same folks who make Goldwave, or N-Track Studio, N as in November. For the Macintosh, there's an awesome app called Amadeus, Amadeus. No one software is necessarily better than another. It's what you're comfortable with. You can only sound as good as your microphone. People ask me every day, what mic should I get? And there's no one definitive answer. It is safe to say that a $12 microphone is great for voice chat, but is really going to make you sound amateur if you're trying to be serious about your podcast. Remember, microphones vary in the way they function, and it depends on what kind of things you want to record, whether your podcast is indoors or outdoors. Some people buy a quality voice recorder and do their podcast on that device and merely copy the files onto the computer for some final editing. Now, unless you are an extremely knowledgeable and articulate person, and most of us, myself included, think we're better than we really are, you should really think about a co-host. It will help balance you. It's someone that you get along with, someone who shares your interest and can add and pick up the slack when your mind freezes. Co-hosts are a great idea. Another thing is, how are you going to interview people that are some distance from you? Many people use software called Skype, S-K-Y-P-E, a great tool to talk to anyone anywhere in the world who has an internet connection. And two add-on recorders that people use for that purpose, CallBurner, and another one is called Skype MX that allows you to record your phone calls. Those of you using screen readers will be glad to know that your screen reader software does not get recorded in the process. Or if you're going to interview people over the telephone, consider some type of phone patch. There is software that accomplishes this task, but also maybe a piece of hardware that you patch between your telephone line and the computer. Either way, the world is your oyster when you have tools that let you communicate with anyone, anywhere in the world. Say you get all of this done and you're ready to post your podcast. Again, many ways to accomplish it, but here's two things to think about. Many people use blogging software called WordPress. Because all you need to do is upload your MP3 and post it, it will automatically update your RSS feed. An RSS feed is something that's very important because you give it to people so that their web browsers automatically let them know when you've updated your podcast. Likewise, it can be used with what are called podcatchers. This is software that automatically downloads your latest creation once it's available. Then you might think about getting your podcast listed on iTunes, so that all the people who use that popular software will see it as an option and can automatically download your latest creation. Or for Windows, there's an application called Juice that does the same thing. You'll want a website with a lot of bandwidth because you'll want your podcast to sound good. And if you do a good job and market yourself and have a quality product, who knows, you may have thousands of listeners. One option that many people use is called Libsyn. That's L-I-B as in liberated, S-Y-N as in syndication, libsyn.com. Another option that some people, like myself, are using is an internet service called bluehost.com. You can post a website there, including an automated installation of the WordPress software that lets you have a blog and your podcasts, all with a domain that comes with the website. Prices start at just $7.95 a month, and you can have up to 15 terabytes. So let the listening begin. Another important thing to do when you create a podcast is to make tags. These are keywords that describe the things that you've talked about. Another suggestion is linking to websites that you mention in your podcast. They, in turn, will usually link to you, and the networking begins. And so does an increase in your audience. Have a regular schedule. At least commit to one podcast per month. If you can, maybe one per week. And to make sure you have enough topics to go around, write down enough ideas to last you for one full year. That's right. If you want to do a weekly podcast, write down 50 show ideas. That doesn't mean you have to do all 50 of them, but it shows that you've thought it through and that you have enough material to keep your show fresh and exciting. But most of all, be passionate about your subject. Live it, believe it, feel it, and convey it. And you'll have one of the best podcasts on the internet. You'll stand out from thousands of other generic creations. And if you'd like to talk to us about helping you market your podcast, please send an email to resources@serotalk.com. That's resources@serotalk.com. We are looking for quality podcasts to broadcast on SAMNET Radio. Likewise, we will link to your podcast from the serotalk.com website and ask you to do the same. And as we network together, each podcast will reach new heights in listenership. So take that dream and that passion and bring it to life with your own podcast. And that's going to conclude Serotalk Podcast number 10. Thanks for listening. Call us with your suggestions. The Blab Line is toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 866-997-2522. Send us an email, resources@serotalk.com. Make sure to listen to SAMNET Radio and drop by serotalk.com for exciting coverage from CSUN 2009.